Welcome, everybody, to the SummerSlam 2017 recap for WrestleZone Radio and the IRW Network. That's Eric Bischoff's IRW Network. I am Brad Gilmore. You might know me from Booker T's Heated Conversations and Reality of Wrestling. Right now, I am joined via phone with the executive producer of Capital Wrestling, all the way from New York, New York, Mr. Matt Ryan. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great, Mr. Gilmore. It is an interesting night in the city that never sleeps. SummerSlam has just ended. We're in the middle of an amazing four-day weekend of pro wrestling. And a lot of questions coming out of tonight, but I think the roadmap to WrestleMania is getting started. And I think that Braun Strowman had a career-defining performance tonight.
I couldn't agree with you more about Braun, and I know we're going to talk about him probably at length here very soon. Let me just ask you this, Matt. What was your overall opinion of this year's SummerSlam? Did it live up to your expectations? Did it overperform? Did it underdeliver? Where are you sitting right now with it?
It's a weird SummerSlam. It's one of those things where there were a lot of matches you were looking forward to, but it felt like you were living in a bubble. Like, it was one of those events where you're waiting for other things to happen. It's hard to explain. It was great, but it didn't feel like a SummerSlam. It didn't feel like the second biggest show of the year until later in the night.
So you're saying it may have just had too many filler matches? Is that what you're saying, or what?
It felt like a show that could have been 3 hours instead of four, which is not necessarily a bad thing. It's just, you get fatigued after a while. The pay-per-view starts at 5 o'clock with the 2 hour pre-show. Then you head into the main show, which is 4 hours long. You're just basically spending the entire time trying to soak up as much information as possible. And with five title changes, including, you know, all the stuff going on the pre-show, it makes it hard for you to sit down and breathe and take everything in. And we were watching it here. I was actually watching it with several members of the Capital Wrestling staff and along with my good friend Andrew Zarian, who runs the Mat Men podcast. And we were talking about the fact that the finishes to the matches felt kind of out of nowhere. Some flash UFC-style finishes, clean finishes for the most part. It's just, you usually feel, especially on these major events, these big, drawn-out Florida-style finishes where there's a big build and then a huge crescendo. It just felt, instead of it being an orchestral piece, it felt like a Misfit song or a Black Flag song. Finish was 2 minutes in and out.
Yeah, you know, yeah, I agree with that for the most part. I thought that for some reason, you know, SummerSlam is supposed to be the second biggest show of the year. But for some reason this year, and I don't know why, I don't know if it had to do with the build or whatnot, I wasn't as hype for SummerSlam as I normally am. I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, it's going to be fun. You know, I'm excited for that Fatal 4-Way. But in many ways, for me, it was a one-match show, and maybe a two-match show. And for that reason alone, I think it over-delivered on my expectations. Even though they should be elevated because it's SummerSlam, it over-delivered for me just because I didn't expect, weirdly, a lot to happen in this show. But a whole lot did, as you alluded to. Five title changes on the night. I mean, I think that's got to be close to some sort of record for a SummerSlam or WrestleMania show for number of title changes we had in one night. But let's before we get to the main card, let's cover the kickoff show real quickly here. We had our opening contest was The Miz and The Miztourage. They defeated Jason Jordan and the Hardy Boys via pinfall, obviously, the first match of the show. Did you get to check out the full 2 hour pre-show, or were you a little late?
Yeah, we watched the whole pre-show. I apologize to those who have to listen to my voice is very grating, but I did. I work with House of Glory Wrestling as their color commentator, and my voice is shot from a show from this Friday night. So deal with me the best you can, folks. But I did watch the whole pre-show, and you know, it was interesting. They opened the doors a little late, and it's kind of weird to see them working in front of an audience that seems small in the grand scheme of things, but a few thousand people were in there already. It was an okay match to start the show. It felt a little dead because of the lack of crowd. It was interesting to see Jason Jordan get taken out there for the finish. He was the one who took the fall.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. You know, I mean, they've really tried their best. And I don't think to really great success as of yet to make Jason Jordan a big deal, make him feel like a big deal. But him eating the pin from the Miztourage doesn't do him a whole lot of favors. But to be honest with you, these at least four of these six competitors being in this match in general didn't do a lot of favors for him. I think the Miz has been on a Hall of Fame run for this past year, really making a case for himself as one of the most valuable players of that company. And then you have the Hardy Boys, who come off a awesome WrestleMania surprise. And then since then, they've kind of gone the way of, if you remember the Dudleys a year or two ago, when they came in like a house on fire. Now they've kind of been mitigated to the opening match on the kickoff show of SummerSlam. And then,
well, if we're looking, and I don't mean to cut you off, Ross, but if we're looking at it from a vacuum here, if we're looking at it from purely just this show, yeah, then it feels a little weird that The Miz and the Hardys are on the first match of the kickoff show 2 hours before the main card. But if we look at it from a grander perspective, if we look at it from this past year and we see the fact that the Hardys are still in the middle of their lawsuit with Anthem Sports and now Global Force Wrestling, and they are unable to utilize the gimmick that they were going to come in with, and that could stall some of their momentum. And coming into SummerSlam, all signs pointed towards them facing off against the Revival in a good old-fashioned North Carolina redneck fight. But Dash Wilder's hurt his shoulder, so he's out till at least September. So I think that undercut them and took them out of a bigger spot. And with The Miz, he is on a Hall of Fame run, and that's why he's feuding with Jason Jordan, and that's why he's with The Miztourage. He's trying to get these guys to an elevated position. Him working with them is not a demoralization or a demotion. It's him having the trust that from the WWE writers to have that opportunity.
No, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. I think what I'm saying is if you're trying to make this guy in Jason Jordan and you're using The Miz to make him, I think he'd be better served on maybe later in the show where there could actually be, like you even said, a larger crowd in-house and then a larger crowd on pay-per-view audience or on the network. I think that a lot of people skip out on these pre-shows. Maybe I don't know how many, but I'm sure a lot of people skip out on these pre-shows, and it's not giving them, I think, the platform that they need in order to really make Jason Jordan feel like the big deal that they're trying to make him do.
But you're also – but what match from the main card do you take out to put that six-man on the main show? That's the question. Like, both of us, you know, work with Reality of Wrestling and Capital Wrestling, and we look at card – and you look at card structure, and you look at why certain matches have to go in certain places. And with the – you know, you can make an argument for the two title matches needing to be on the main show, but you look at SummerSlam, Charlotte, Becky Lynch, they're not on the main card. How do you structure the show and have everything flow as the best as you can without screwing over the other matches?
Well, yeah, I mean, but I think if you're trying to take something out to put it in place of that, if you want to give them a better, more prominent spot on the card, I mean, there's a couple matches that I think could have been put on the pre-show. I think that, and we'll get to it, you know, Rusev and Randy Orton. If that's the plan they were going to do, why put that on a big stage? And then I think the other one would be the Big Kaz, Big Show match. I mean, I know you're trying to make Big Kaz be this big-time heel, but, you know, I mean, you're also trying to make Jason Jordan in the same breath. So you got to see who you want to place over the other in order of making them feel like the biggest deal possible. And like I said, it's not like Jason Jordan's dead in the water. I don't want to come across as that. I'm just saying, like, maybe if you're trying to make this guy, you just had this big reveal of him being Kurt Angle's son. It was a huge storyline that, you know, what is it, for 2 months or what have you, where you're trying to figure out what happened, and then you relegate him to the opening match. And that's all I'm saying.
That's a fair point. I'm just looking at it from the macro perspective of, okay, we got all this stuff here. How do we cut it up? And him being on the show speaks louder to the fact that they're trying to salvage it than putting him on the pre-show, in my opinion.
Okay, well, yeah, point taken. But interesting match. You know, it was what it was. It was the opening to the pre-show, And, you know, I think the next match that we saw, the Cruiserweight Championship match, Akira Tozawa, the champion, ended up losing to Neville. Neville regains his crown as the king of the Cruiserweights. What are you thinking about this one, Matt?
Good match, solid match, surprised by the title change, but they did it probably to try to drive some life into the match that was on SummerSlam. And I think that they see the continuing money in Neville as the top heel. So I think it was a good match. It was a good match for what it was. Got the crowd into it and a way to, you know, start off the rest of the SummerSlam pre-show pretty hot.
Yeah, you know, I'd agree with you. I think that they want to keep Neville doing what he's been doing for the past, you know, 6-7 months, however long, or maybe it was longer than that, like 8 months he was the Cruiserweight champion. Let Akira Tozawa get it, a little moment of glory, switch it right back onto the King of the Cruiserweights. Maybe have this story last a couple more matches and then build up the next guy. I think Neville's the perfect person to, you know, revolve your whole Cruiserweight world around, your Cruiserweight universe around, and him continuing being in the main event, I think is just best for all sides.
I completely agree.
Hey, then let's talk about this. This was a fun match. This was the SmackDown Tag Team Championship match. The Usos defeated the now 3-time tag team champs. They defeated the New Day in this tag team match. And you know what, Matt? I thought this was a really fun match. I actually really like, and I've said this before, I really like when Xavier Woods works these matches because I think that he's actually underrated as a performer. I think that, you know, a lot of the times he was looked at as the mouthpiece of the New Day. But, you know, when you watch the stuff that he did as Consequences Creed in the early TNA days, this guy was a really incredible athlete in the X Division, in some of those Ultimate X matches or the King of the Mountain matches. He did stuff I had never seen done before. And I think that anytime he gets to showcase his talent on a big stage is a good time.
Yeah, that match was getting all of us at the SummerSlam party I was at pretty amped up for the main show. The Usos and New Day have excellent chemistry. That was a really fun, balls-to-the-wall kind of match, and it set the pace for some of the other matches in the evening. You know, the New Day don't need the belts. The Usos, you know, are guys who can define the SmackDown Tag Team Division. And, you know, with the alleged possibility of a draft coming up in September, a lot of teams could be moving back and forth. It'll be interesting to see what will happen if, like, let's say a Hardys go up against the Usos or any of these other tag teams make their way over the SmackDown to face off against the New Day or the Usos. I think there's a little bit of money left in this feud. You might have a bit of a bigger blow-off maybe in October. I know September's the Raw pay-per-view with No Mercy, but it was a fun match. It was a great way to set the tone, and if that was the opener to the pay-per-view, if they did that as the proper open, that would have been awesome.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. But the opening to the SummerSlam 2017 card, the main card, was a big match. I mean, it featured probably the biggest star, or at least one of the biggest stars. He's on the Mount Rushmore for WWE. John Cena went against Baron Corbin, defeated Baron Corbin to open up SummerSlam. I thought it was interesting. This match had really little build to me anyway. It was kind of, in my opinion, an excuse for John Cena to have a match on SummerSlam, because he was available to have a match on SummerSlam. So it was what it was. But Cena always goes out there and he puts his heart and soul out there. And you got to give the guy a whole lot of credit for that.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was a great way to start off SummerSlam. On Tuesday on SmackDown, you see a little interesting right turn booking that kind of leads into the world title match that happened tonight for the SmackDown brand, which we'll get into later. But the thing I want to talk about is not necessarily the match, but the end of the match with John Cena hugging the various dignitaries like Jeff Ross and some other, like Michael Che and Betty Skoland, and I think members of his family. And you can see a look on his face at the end of that segment. They hung on to Cena's expression like he wasn't going to be back for a while. Like, that was a weird little moment there for me that I'm trying not to, like, put the tinfoil hat on. I found that to be a little interesting that they did that there at the end of the match.
You know, I actually had the same exact thought going through my mind where they left that camera shot on him. He kind of had this little glimmer in his eye like, oh, I'm going to miss this. And, you know, but I think that that's probably the likely scenario. John Cena actually did the same thing after last year's SummerSlam where he wrestled AJ Styles? I think it was. He did the same thing after last year's SummerSlam. He went off for a little while, let AJ have a little run, and then come back after he was done filming one of his projects. And I know he's just announced for the next Transformers movie, and I hear that that's moving into pre-production rather rapidly. So, I mean, he might be off already back to Hollywood here for a little bit. And, you know, I think for John Cena, that's a good thing. I think John Cena is good in moderation, but also I think it has also, if that is the case, it conflicts with reports that came out a couple weeks ago that he was getting ready to make his debut on the Raw brand or his re-debut on the Raw brand and start working with Samoa Joe, which I saw was advertised for some house shows. So you and I might just be putting on our conspiracy theory, our tinfoil hats, as you said. But I had the same thought. But do you think him going over Baron Corbin here hurts Baron Corbin at all?
It's really hard to say. I think they're going to need to aggressively rehab his character. And you see the rebranding already with his entrance tonight, the new entrance video, the new theme. I like Baron Corbin. I don't know if he's necessarily ready for the position they put him in. I'm not trying to get into the whole political stuff where he was getting into arguments with Dave Meltzer on Twitter. That's, you know, that's beyond my pay grade. But I like Baron Corbin. I see potential in him. He's one of those guys that if he had a few more weeks of seasoning on NXT, that might be good. But he was immediately given the rocket pack when he won the Andre the Giant Battle Royal last year. So to me, it's going to be a process. He needs the right opponent and the right lengthy feud to get him to that position again. It'll take a while.
You know, to be quite frank, I don't see really much in Baron Corbin. He doesn't really do much for me at all. And I've heard people say, oh man, you know, he's actually pretty good. You got to, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I just never really, he didn't connect with me. He didn't do anything for me. So, if they want someone like me to get in, you know, into the Baron Corbin character, I agree with you. They need to give him something that's got some meat on the bone that's going to last for a little bit and really, find his teacher, you know. I think, you know, some of these guys who start off like maybe as football players or whatnot, not from, you know, a pro wrestling background in like independence or whatnot, I think a lot of the times it just takes them finding that right opponent and having, like you said, that long drawn out feud that really creates them and helps cement them as a character and a performer. And I agree with you. I think that's what Baron Corbin needs and maybe hopefully WWE is looking for. Let me ask you this. Is Naomi's glowing women's championship the worst custom title in the history of wrestling?
No. Not in the least bit.
No.
No, because it fits her personality. It fits her character. I don't give a good damn about doing things to a belt if it helps define the character.
No, I don't either. I just think that it's ugly.
You know, I don't. When you take the lights off of it, it looks a little much, but you're not looking at the belt for when the lights are on. You're looking at it for when the lights are off, when it's glowing. It's a part of the entrance. It's a part of the whole thing. If you have a character like that and you have something that defines her, like the feel the glow, you're an idiot if you don't try to do something to make that entrance the best it could possibly be. And if you don't put a little glow on that belt, then you're really doing a disservice to all the work she's putting in and you're putting in for that entrance.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to look so tacky. It just looked tacky.
I'm not Reggie Parks. I'm not J-Mar, so I can't design a belt worth a good... But I think for what they were given, they did a good job because you can't completely redesign the belt to make it fit for that. You've got to work within the constraints of what you have. And I think for that, they did an excellent job.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, it's beauty is in the eye beholder, right, Matt?
I dig the entrance.
The entrance is great. I just don't like the belt. But, you know, it looks like maybe that belt won't last so much longer. And it might not, as of Tuesday, we might have no GLOW championship anymore because Natalya did defeat Naomi. Natalya, I think, a well-deserved champion. I didn't know if, like, right now was the right time. But I guess, you know, there's no time like the present. She has really put in a lot of work. And I don't think she's held a championship in, like, at least 5-6 years. in WWE. Yeah. So I think this was a nice moment, I think, for longtime fans of the women's division and Natalya and the Hart family. It was just a nice moment for her.
I feel like the reason why this title change works for me is now that you give the baby faces on the roster, which outweigh the heels by a pretty huge length, an opportunity to fight for the belt. So you give Charlotte and you give Becky Lynch some things to do in terms of giving them a reason to fight for the belt. Because now you don't have a babyface champion. You don't have the babyfaces going after the belt. So you have a heel champion who can chase and is pretty hateable. The crazy cat lady character genuinely gives me an aggravating emotion. So it works.
Yeah, you know, I see what you're saying. And I think you're right. This was kind of, for me, one of the finishes out of nowhere thing, though, that you kind of talked about. It was just a quick, out of nowhere, boom, sharpshooter, tap out. And then, like, Natalya really didn't even celebrate. She kind of celebrated. She looked like, okay, yeah, I know this was going to happen. Were at any moment at your SummerSlam party, were y'all waiting on bated breath for Carmella for the cash-in?
Yeah, as soon as she handed over the belt, she was shooting, like, that delay. And I think they did that on purpose to try to screw with people's heads. Like, oh, here it comes. Ah, nothing. So a little bit of psychology there. The silence means something.
Hey, silence is golden, once said Ari Gold. Moving right along, Big Kaz and the Big Show with Enzo Amore in the shark cage. I'm not even going to lie. So this morning I caught a red-eye flight from Miami to Houston. I was on like 2 hours sleep. I was watching the SummerSlam. I was excited for the SummerSlam. Full disclosure, 100% honesty, I'm going to keep it 100, like they say in Texas. I fell asleep during this match. I'm not going to lie to you, Matt. I really did. I dozed off 100% in all honesty.
So I'll tell you, all you need to watch is the finish. Because Enzo Amore stripped down to his underpants, covered himself in baby oil, and did not run through the streets of Brooklyn, which is what actually happens in Greenpoint on a Friday night. But I digress about my hometown. He puts on some wide receiver gloves like he's Andre Johnson in 07. And puts himself through the bars, drops down, big boot, go home. The finish was the match, and that's what it needed to be.
Well, there you go. I appreciate your Andre Johnson reference, by the way. That hits home for me. And I'll have to go back and watch this match. I will. I just, you know, honestly, I don't know if that speaks. It was the only match that I dozed off during. Everything else I was wide awake for, even this debacle that we're about to talk about. But, you know, I will go back and have to check out Enzo. But, what I mean, do you give a thumbs up to the match, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle?
It was in the middle for me. Like, it was what I expected. You know, they have Big Show with a gimmicked handicap, try to put it on an even plane for Cass. I liked it. It felt a little over the top, but they're trying to sell the shark cage playset, so more power to them. Make your money, pal.
Sell your toys. This is like a Joel Schumacher Batman film. Randy Orton and Rusev. There's not really a lot to say about it because there wasn't a lot of match, but, I mean, who the hell did Rusev piss off?
You know what? I liked it because Rusev was aggressive, attacked from behind, slipped on the banana peel, lost focus, RKO. Yet again, you got a four-hour show, but you got to hose it down, keep it moving. I don't think a full-blown match would have done anybody any good. I think sometimes you just need a little bit to show how aggressive Rusev can be, but also you show the wily veteran Randy Orton, you give him an opportunity, you give him a chance to hit that RKO out of nowhere. He does his job for you.
When you actually put it like that, I actually like it a little bit more, to be honest with you. But at the same time, it's just like, it is SummerSlam. It's the second biggest show of the year. And sometimes, even though it's a four-hour show, when you have those officially eight-second matches or whatever it was, you know, it's remnant of the Daniel Bryan Sheamus thing to where it's like, not to the same degree, you know, because we were all waiting for that match. So not for the same degree, but it's just like, this is a big pay-per-view. Second biggest of the year. This is a match with the guy who is just your WWE champion at WrestleMania, and you give him 8-12 seconds in the ring. I can see how it would leave a bad taste in somebody's mouth. For me, I really didn't care. I wasn't really invested in the match that much. But with the way you put it, you know, everyone came out, I guess, looking good. You know, Rusev, just like you say, he slipped on a banana peel. He effed up. And, you know, it happens. It happens in life. So I want to talk about this next match, though, that I thought was really interesting. The Raw Women's Championship match, Sasha Banks, Alexa Bliss. It was originally supposed to be Bayley. We know she had the injury to her shoulder. She was taken out. Sasha Banks put in, who I thought should have been in there from the get-go anyway. But she defeats Alexa Bliss for the championship. Did you see this coming?
I felt like that's where they were going with it. I'm a big fan of Alexa Bliss, so I'm not happy that she dropped the belt, especially with the whole promo package for No Mercy being based around her. I think that she's someone they can build the Raw Women's Division around, and they've been doing so quite well ever since the Superstar Shakeup a couple of months ago. But I'm fine with Sasha winning the belt. It was a good match, but yet again, one of those finishes that kind of came out of nowhere. They're really trying to do the anything can happen in World Wrestling Entertainment stuff tonight. But it was a good match. I like Alexa and Sasha together. We're going to probably see a rematch at No Mercy, and we could probably see this drawn out into Sasha turning heel and going against Bayley. We also have that alleged draft in September, so who the hell knows what's going to happen between now and then.
You know, I mean, the way the fans are kind of turning on Bayley, I wonder if they would, if they pull the carpet out from under us and turn Bayley heel. Wouldn't that be something? I don't think she could pull it off.
That's the thing. It's like Sasha Banks can be a better heel than Bayley.
I think Sasha's
a better heel than babyface anyway. Mm-hmm. So you might be utilizing her in her best way. But you also may need to give Bayley some time off. I think there's a little bit of fatigue. And it's nothing against Bayley. It's nothing against the writers. It's just when you – and we were talking about this at the SummerSlam party too. And my buddy Andrew Zarian said he's got this theory about NXT fans or people who come up from NXT. Not everybody who watches Raw or SmackDown watches NXT. So they're not automatically going to identify with who this person is. And you have to do a lot of work to build up who they are. The NXT fans already know. So when you're trying to re-educate and refine out that character, people are going to get bitchy and moany and aggravated. The vocal minority that watch NXT. So it could be that. It also could just be Bayley needs some time to get herself a little bit right, figure out and fine-tune what it is, and go back to being the personality that people like. I don't dislike Bayley. I like Bayley quite a lot. But some people may need a little bit of a break.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that theory is probably spot on. And I think Bayley, you know, this injury, sometimes these injuries happen at the right time. And I think this is one of those fortuitous injuries that sometimes occur in professional wrestling. Finn Balor, the demon Finn Balor, and Bray Wyatt went at it. You know, the build for this match was cool. I thought that this was a nice matchup, you know, on paper, especially with these dark characters. And for me, honestly, the match performed really well. I thought that Finn Balor was a house on fire. This is 1 year removed from when he won the Universal Championship at SummerSlam, and I think this was another big match for him, and I really think he delivered, and his entrance this time around was just spectacular.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked playing into the whole world in his hand stuff that Bray's been known to do, but he did it especially this past Monday night, so that was really cool. It was a really good match. It was a really awesome showcase for both Finn and Bray. Finn wisely getting the victory there. I see this as a way to build Finn back to the top slowly and incrementally, working against these guys, and the same thing for Bray. If you look at the upper card for both shows, it is so heavy right now that you've got to find different ways and different matchups for these guys to keep it fresh and interesting. And you also you've got to figure out who gets TV time and who doesn't. So if people are mad that Roman Reigns is in the main event and not Finn Balor, hey, give it time. The world was different a year ago. It might be different 6 months from now. We don't know where the hell all of this is going, but it was a great showcase, a great match, and I'm glad Finn got the victory, and I'm glad he walked out of SummerSlam, not going to the hospital.
Yeah, you and I both. Let me tell you this, though. This Raw Tag Team Championship match between Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins versus Sheamus and Cesaro, I thought was one of my – it's not like it was the match of the night, but it was one of my favorites of the night. I thought this was a match to where Dean Ambrose showcased something I thought that he had lost. I felt like he was fired up for this match. Maybe he was working with Seth again, but I feel like he was actually trying. And for like a long time, maybe like almost a year, I thought that Dean Ambrose just hasn't been trying very hard to be a great professional wrestler. I thought he's just, you know, to hate to bring this up, but it was like what Steve Austin told him, resting on his laurels. And I think that he can always do more than what he has done. And I was like, okay, I'm a Dean Ambrose fan again. He came out like a house on fire. He and Seth and Sheamus and Cesaro, I thought, had a great match.
It was a fantastic match. Rest in peace, Beachball.
Yeah, yes, I love that. What a great move. Well, I mean, Cesaro's so over with me for that.
Cesaro doing the thing that in any other audience, that it wasn't Brooklyn, Montreal, or Philadelphia, would immediately get booed out of the building. Grabbed that beach ball, ripped it up, and it was one of the moments of the night. And that's not taken away from the match. The match was exceptional. But to your point about Ambrose, I think it was a little bit of a recharge for him. He's been working with The Miz for a little while now. It was like half a year or so where they were going against each other. So I think it was something new, something fresh. He was, you know, able to get into it. And when, you know, his history with Seth, and also he's known Cesaro for years. And it's been a great story. That's the thing. I think that's what we were missing with Dean Ambrose for a little while, was a story that we can all get into. And anytime you mention The Shield with WWE fans, they are immediately invested. It's one of those dynamic things over the past decade, including CM Punk and Daniel Bryan, that are the characters, the stories, and the moments that whenever you mention it to a wrestling fan, they're immediately in tune with what they want to do and how to get into it. So it was a great moment. Dean Ambrose becoming a member of the Grand Slam Club. So that was really cool. Winning his first Raw tag team title. Yeah, his first tag team title with, you know, a Shield member in Seth Rollins.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that it's cool. Welcome to the club, I guess, for Dean Ambrose. A great accomplishment for him. And I think that they made the right decision taking the titles off Sheamus and Cesaro. I think this is a great move. And I'm excited to see the rematch for this at No Mercy and, you know, where this feud ends up going. You know, I don't know. You know, someone pointed out that all three Shield members were wearing red tonight. I don't know if that's another tinfoil hat thing, but it is an interesting observation. And we'll see where it goes in the coming months. But I thought this was one of the most fun matches, I think, on the show. And really, that finish was well-deserved. It was built up. The story was great, like you said. And I think it was a good payoff at your second biggest show of the year. Now, this next match, the United States Championship match between AJ Styles, Kevin Owens, Shane O'Mac, the special referee. I don't know if I'm in the minority here, because I haven't really seen a lot of chatter about it, but I don't think that AJ Styles and Kevin Owens have great chemistry together. I don't think their matches have really delivered to where we think that they would have.
I feel like they've had really good matches. I think one of the things tonight was they utilized Shane a little too much. I think that they could have limited his bumping and movements, but it's Shane McMahon. So he's much like Ricky Morton. Anytime you got Shane McMahon out there, got to bump, got to do something. Shane got to bump. And the best part of the match, you fall off of buildings. What's wrong with you? It's probably one of the best lines. But it might be a little oil and water here. AJ and Kevin Owens are similar but different.
Yeah.
So I can see where there's a little bit. It's like the tango and the cha-cha. Similar dances, but not similar enough. And I'm not good at dancing. Nor do I know much about dancing. So that metaphor might be garbage. But that match was not bad. I just think that they could have done, this is just armchair booking here, I think they could have done a little less with Shane. The finish was good. The crowd was into it the entire time. And I think this is a good way to lead into the eventual Kevin Owens-Shane McMahon match that will happen at either Survivor Series or the Royal Rumble. And I think Shane McMahon was preparing by falling out of that helicopter.
Yeah, that's his next big spot. But what I was going to say, actually, I don't think that they've had the greatest of matches, but I actually thought tonight was their best match, in my opinion. This was the best match that they have had. And I agree with you about Shane McMahon, but also when you have that stipulation of a special referee, you pigeonhole yourself into a scenario in which he has to be utilized. Could he have been utilized less than he was? Absolutely. But the fans are expecting him to not just count the 1, 2, 3.
Oh, yeah. No, I completely agree. I just don't think he should have been like a pinball in there. I think 4 times he was physically harmed in that match. And I think if you did it twice, or if you did it a little less, and if you didn't do it so soon after one another, because they did it in the beginning, they did it a little bit in the middle, and not really towards the end. I don't remember it really affecting the finish. So with that, you could have, I think if they spaced it out better, it might have been more impactful, or if they took away 1 or 2 of them.
Yeah, yeah, no, like I said, I don't disagree. I think it's just one of those things that, you know, we just had, Reality Wrestling's biggest event, of the summer for us. Booker T was the special referee for the championship match. And you know, the fans expected Booker to be involved in how it all went down. And so I was looking at this match through the same glasses, and I was like, okay, I get it. I will say I did like Shane McMahon's referee shirt. I thought that was pretty fly. The WWE Championship match, Jinder Mahal and Shinsuke Nakamura. Shinsuke, I said before this match, you know, maybe a week or so ago, I said that this match was the most important match in both these men's careers. It's their biggest match they've ever had, both of them, on the biggest stage so far. And they had to deliver to solidify Jinder's championship run and Shinsuke's championship contendership. That was my opinion going into the show. I ask you, Matt Ryan, what did you think of this contest?
I thought it was a good match. The finish could have been tighter. I think Nakamura should have won. But seeing what they did with the next match, I can understand why, and it's interesting. I think if they did not change direction on Tuesday, I think Shinsuke Nakamura would have won, and I think Baron Corbin would have walked out WWE champion. So I think that, and there's a WWE tour of Japan and India coming up, so they might just be playing their cards to ride it out into there, and we might see a title change in Japan later this year. I think walking into the Royal Rumble, Shinsuke Nakamura will be the WWE World Champion. I think fans are disappointed tonight. They wanted that major SummerSlam moment, but the WWE is a global brand, and that's something that we've got us. It was highlighted in this match with the Punjabi commentary and the Japanese commentary. You had a Canadian-born Indian and a Japanese superstar in one of the headline matches of the second biggest pay-per-view of the year. So when you look at it from a business perspective, and I know wrestling fans hate to look that way, unless it's convenient for them, because if it's convenient for them, then of course it's a great thing. It's like any other sports fan. If it's convenient for you, awesome. If it's not, it's garbage. But for the WWE's business plan, with a multi-million dollar, and I'm hearing billion-dollar deals with India, they're growing in the Asia market. You know, these guys are going to be defining the brand worldwide. It's not just running shows in Hershey and Poughkeepsie. They're running shows in some of the most populated places on planet Earth, and you need people who reflect that. I think Jinder Mahal looked like a world champion tonight. Shinsuke Nakamura continues to be one of the defining faces of this generation of professional wrestling. I think that the Colossus could have looked a little better, but I think that in the long run, it will be the right call. It's annoying tonight as a fan of Shinsuke Nakamura that he didn't walk out of there with the belt, but we've got a long road to WrestleMania, and I think Nakamura is walking in there with the world title.
Yeah, I think this is just one of those things to where it's like he didn't win on the big stage in his first opportunity, and now it makes us want him to win even more. So when he does, we'll be twice as satisfied as we would have been if he won tonight. I think Shinsuke Nakamura will be the WWE champion. I think it's only a matter of time. I think Jinder Mahal proved a lot to me tonight and a lot of wrestling fans that he is a legitimate main eventer. And he really is carrying that WWE championship like a champion. You know, I remember this guy when he was coming through reality wrestling after he got released from WWE. And, you know, he kind of he looked like a guy who just kind of gave up. And it's nice to see him at the top of the company, the top of the ladder, grab the brass ring and the champion at the second biggest show of the year. That's saying something. But I think without further ado, we have to get into the match of the night. The match of the night, without a doubt, was the main event for the WWE Universal Championship. The champion Brock Lesnar defended against Braun Strowman, Samoa Joe, and Roman Reigns. Matt, talk to me, brother. This match was
the Braun
phenomenal.
Strowman show came into Brooklyn tonight, Ross, and good God, it was an amazing showing by Braun Strowman. All four guys brought the right kind of aggression, the right kind of passion. This was a big money main event. This coming Saturday is Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor, but this is the match that people need to be talking about. This was the money fight. You had a hoss battle to end all hoss battles, and you know what? Brock Lesnar walking out of there with the title surprised me, actually, but I think Braun Strowman and Brock Lesnar may be facing off sooner rather than later. Samoa Joe really showing how awesome he is. You know, the sell job, taking the stairs twice from Braun Strowman. Lesnar dying on the vine, coming back like the conqueror that he is. Roman Reigns, you know, trying to murder people and eviscerate them with steel stairs. It was one hell of a fight, one hell of a professional wrestling match. There weren't enough flips for some people, but with four dudes walking in there, weighing about just a grocery bill over 300 apiece, we had one hell of a SummerSlam main event, and one of the best SummerSlam main events in quite some time. It really helped put the Universal title on a higher pedestal. You saw how aggressive and how much each guy wanted it. And let's look back for a second. In the marquee matches at SummerSlam this year, AJ Styles, Kevin Owens, Shinsuke frickin' Nakamura, and Samoa Joe all hanging on the biggest stage of the summer. It is an awesome thing to see. Professional wrestling is alive and well, and it's pretty damn cool to see that match here tonight at SummerSlam.
No, and you know what? For me, the streak continues. And when I say that, Brock Lesnar has been, and correct me if I'm wrong, in every SummerSlam main event since 2014. You know, I think 2014 was Cena, 2015 was Taker, last year was Randy Orton, and this year, this big fatal four-way. And for me, Brock Lesnar delivers every time. And then who could forget that awesome match of the year that he had with CM Punk, I think in 2013 that might have been. And the year before that, he main evented, I think, against Triple H. This guy is great at SummerSlam, and a lot of people give Brock Lesnar a lot of crap. Oh, he just does the same thing. All he wants is the money, blah, 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 blah. But Brock Lesnar went in there tonight, and he really did his absolute best to make Braun Strowman feel like a legitimate main event caliber monster. And he did. I mean, he did. Think about this. Brock Lesnar, youngest WWE champion, you know, main eventing WrestleManias, blah, blah, blah. What, you know, UFC champion, legitimate tough man, has no reason to really do what he did tonight for Braun Strowman, but he did it. And it made Braun Strowman look like an unstoppable force, the likes we haven't seen in a very long time. And so I think, you know, wrestling fans give Brock a lot of crap, but they might need to walk it back after his performance tonight.
Brock Lesnar came in, drew a house, put over the young guy, and is still in the territory. He, you know, a lot of people, you know, take dumps on the part-timers like Lesnar, but they're like Andre the Giant and Bruiser Brody were in the 70s and 80s. They're there to pop a house. They're there to pop interest. And, you know, Lesnar, he is the champion, but he makes every title defense feel special. You can't argue against that. You can't say that every time Brock Lesnar fights for a title that it doesn't feel unique. It doesn't feel special. It doesn't feel like a marquee moment in that company. And tonight, Braun Strowman was made a made man, a guy that was considered, you know, not ready for any position this time last year, is now one of the guys on Raw and has been on a steady climb since late 2016. Ever since the draft, just a slow build to this moment here tonight where he almost killed Brock Lesnar, put him through two tables, and then lifted one up and dropped one on the bastard. It was one hell of a main event and one hell of a way to send people home happy.
And you know what? No one came out weaker from that main event. Everybody came out stronger and better than when they went in. And that is such a difficult task to do, especially when there's four bodies competing against each other. So kudos to WWE and whoever put that match together, because they did an awesome job. It was the match I was looking forward to the most. It delivered. I did hear, let me ask you this. Did you hear these rumors that The Undertaker was going to be involved in the main event?
He was in New York. I've heard from various people, like people I can trust, and I believe Dave Meltzer reported on it as well, that The Undertaker is in New York. And let's remember, Raw and SmackDown still go down tomorrow on Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn over at Barclays Center. So we may see him tomorrow. It could be a red herring. Who knows? He might be there for a licensing deal. He might be there because he got Met tickets. Who the hell knows? But Taker's in New York, and we're going to have a very interesting 48 hours heading into Raw and SmackDown.
I just don't see it. I mean, I just don't see him coming back. But, you know, I didn't see him coming back after WrestleMania 30.
I don't want him to wrestle. I don't want him in a match, but this may be the thing to set up something for the fall, not for him, but for Roman Reigns.
It very well could be. I mean, if they want to utilize him in an on-screen character role, I think that's 100% fine. I don't want to see The Undertaker wrestle again, ever again. Not ever, ever, ever again. So, and that's nothing against The Undertaker. I just think that his send-off was so perfect that you don't need to do, he doesn't need to wrestle, and I don't think that he will.
Yeah.
So, Matt, once again, we broke down the entire card. Where do you sit now that we've talked about it, we digested it? Where do you sit now? Do you still feel the same way about this SummerSlam card? And if you had a letter grade, what would you give it?
I would give it a strong B+. I think there's things they could have tightened up. I think there's things that they could have done. But also, it was a 7-hour event. And, you know, as we've gone in the car I'm in from one borough to another, I've looked at we've talked this show over, we've figured some stuff out, and I think it's a better show than people will give it credit for. Was it the greatest SummerSlam of all time? No. Was it the worst one? No. 1995, King, Mabel, and Diesel. That's the worst SummerSlam ever. The ladder match couldn't save it. But that's beyond the point. I think this is a very good show. I think this show was a one or two match show, but the matches on the show tonight delivered. I think it's just hard with a 4-hour pay-per-view. You're running, and it was a sprint too. You had to keep up the entire time. So kudos to everybody who watched it, and kudos to the WWE for once again putting on 4 straight days of professional wrestling in one city, and the crowd keep wanting more.
Yeah, you know, big ups to WWE. I think I agree with you. I think B+ is a fair rating for this show. I think there's parts that could have been better, finishes that could have been better planned out. But overall, you know what? It was an enjoyable SummerSlam, and 95 will forever be the worst one. Matt, do you have anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
Certainly do. Capital Wrestling. Capital Wrestling Television. This recap drops on a Monday tonight on Capital Wrestling Television. It is a battle for the Intergender World Championship of the Known Universe. Colossal Mike Law taking on the Bad Apple Matt McIntosh. You can watch that right here on the IRW Network at 7:05 p.m. on demand, as well as all 20 episodes of Capital Wrestling Television on IRWNetwork.com. If you want to catch the live stream of the show on Facebook Live or on GFQNetwork.com or GFQLive.tv, our friends over at the GFQ Network providing the live stream before the on-demand post at 6:05 p.m. Wrestling on 6:05 exists, and it exists on the GFQ Network. Capital Wrestling returns to Hoboken on October 14th. Two main event matches assigned. Sonny Kiss will be taking on the champion of the 1%, Logan Easton LaRue. And in a main event just announced on our social media page, the Bad Apple Matt McIntosh takes on One Above All, Anthony Gangone. For tickets and more info, go to capitalwrestling.com.
Well, I'm glad I asked you that question. Also, I want to plug that Reality Wrestling has a major announcement tomorrow. Be on the lookout on WrestleZone. You know, there's a little hint for you for that news. Major, major event's going to change a lot of stuff for the Reality Wrestling, the flagship of Texas wrestling, the front row of sports and entertainment. Also, Booker T and I, Heated Conversations. We just dropped our TNA podcast talking about TNA's Booker's Tales of TNA. You can check out some of the video clips on the Title Match Wrestling Network. And also, the Summer of Champions, our biggest show, the episodes will start airing here next week. So if you're a Reality Wrestling fan, stay tuned to that. And you can follow me at Brad Gilmore. Matt, where can they follow you?
Follow me on Twitter at the letter I, the letter M, Matt Ryan, or on Twitter at Capital Wrestling. Leave off the last G for goodness.
There you go. Well, Matt, it was a pleasure talking to you, and that is your SummerSlam 2017 breakdown for the WrestleZone Radio and IRWNetwork.com. I'm Brad Gilmore. Talk to y'all soon.